A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Here's what Daniel sent us. He's been ordering from AliExpress for over a decade, like millions of Israelis, and he's noticed something strange. A $3 widget from China lands in Tel Aviv in 10 days. Meanwhile, a package from a store 20 kilometers away takes 14. And that's not a fluke. It's a symptom. 17% VAT, prices running about 30% above the OECD average, local middlemen who add markup without adding value. The domestic shopping experience is so broken that ordering from the other side of the planet has become the frictionless option. His question is whether AliExpress can actually become sustainable and ethically credible, or whether a platform built on cheapness and opacity is structurally incapable of being responsible. Can you filter for ethical suppliers? Can the platform mature past the Wild West phase? Or is the whole value proposition built on not asking hard questions?
This is the paradox right at the heart of it. AliExpress is genuinely indispensable for Israeli consumers. Not just a nice to have, but the only practical way to get specific components, niche parts, things local distributors simply don't stock. And yet the very features that make it indispensable, the speed, the price, the frictionlessness, are the same features that obscure everything about how those goods are made, by whom, under what conditions, at what environmental cost. So, the question isn't just, can AliExpress reform? It's whether reform and the core value proposition can coexist at all.
Because if you make the supply chain fully transparent, you might not like what you see. And if you don't like what you see, you might stop buying. And if enough people stop buying, the platform's incentive to be transparent evaporates. It's a loop.
The loop is structural, not accidental. The opacity is load-bearing. It's what allows the price to be the price. You see a number and a delivery estimate. You don't see a factory audit. You don't see a carbon footprint. You don't see labor conditions. And the platform's entire user experience is designed to keep it that way.
Daniel made an interesting point. He said he doesn't feel much sympathy for the argument that local shops are being undercut. His take is that those shops were just middlemen inserting themselves into the supply chain without providing real value. And I think he's right about that part. But the platform replacing them is also a middleman. It's just a more efficient one that hides its costs better.
That's a crucial distinction. The local shop's markup was visible. You could see you were paying double. The platform's markup is distributed across logistics fees, algorithmic placement, payment processing, and externalized costs you never see on the receipt. The environmental cost of air freight from Shenzhen to Liege to Tel Aviv doesn't appear on your checkout page. The labor conditions in the factory don't appear on your checkout page, so it feels cheaper. And in cash terms, it is cheaper, but the full cost is being paid elsewhere, by someone else, somewhere else, or at some other time. That's the definition of an externality. The platform is optimized to make those externalities invisible. That's not a bug, it's the business model.
The question Daniel's really asking is whether that business model can evolve into something that internalizes those costs without collapsing under its own weight. Can you have cheap, fast, frictionless, and ethical all at once? Or do you have to pick two or three?
To answer that, we first have to understand why AliExpress works so well in Israel specifically, because the Israeli case is unusual. Amazon doesn't have fulfillment infrastructure here. The cost of living is punishingly high. Local distributors are slow and expensive. So AliExpress didn't just win on price, it won on reliability, which is the stranger part of the story.
The fact that a package from China arrives faster than one from within Israel is the kind of detail that sounds like a joke until you've lived it. Daniel mentioned obscure standoffs and GPU rises. These are exactly the kinds of low-volume, high-specificity items where the local market simply doesn't exist. So it's not even a choice between local and global. The global option is the only option.
That's where the sustainability question gets complicated. If the alternative to buying a niche component from AliExpress is not buying it at all, the environmental calculus shifts. But if the alternative is driving to three different stores in your car, burning fuel, only to find none of them have it in stock, well, the consolidated air freight model starts looking less terrible by comparison. Not good, but less terrible.
Consolidated being the key word there. Cainiao, Alibaba's logistics arm, runs a hub in Liège, Belgium. Packages from multiple Chinese suppliers get bundled there, then flown to Tel Aviv on dedicated cargo routes. That consolidation improves per-package efficiency compared to individual courier shipping. It's still air freight, which generates 50 to 100 times more CO2 per ton kilometer than sea freight. But it's not the worst version of air freight.
That's the kind of nuance that gets lost in the buying from China is always worse narrative. For some purchases, AliExpress is the lower carbon option compared to the local alternative. For others, it's dramatically worse. The problem is the platform gives you no way to tell the difference.
Which brings us back to transparency. Daniel's hope, and I think it's a cautious hope, he's been using this platform for 10 years, is that AliExpress could introduce filtering tools that let conscientious buyers see which suppliers meet ethical standards. And the question is whether that's realistic or wishful thinking.
There's a program that exists already. Alibaba launched something called the Green Channel in 2023. It's a voluntary sustainability certification for suppliers. But adoption has been extremely low, and the reason is straightforward. Getting certified costs time and money, and the platform's search algorithm doesn't reward it. If you're a supplier who invested in better labor practices and sustainable materials, your products don't rank any higher than the factory next door that did none of those things. In fact, you probably rank lower because your prices are higher.
The algorithm is structurally biased against the ethical supplier.
It's not even bias in the sense of intentional discrimination. It's that the algorithm optimizes for what consumers click and buy, and consumers click and buy the cheapest option. The algorithm is a mirror. It reflects our revealed preferences back at us, and our revealed preference collectively is for cheap over ethical. Most people, most of the time, when faced with two identical looking products at different prices, pick the cheaper one. That's not a moral failing. It's rational behavior given the information available. The problem is, the information available is deliberately limited.
If the ethical difference were visible, if you could see that this $3 widget was made in a factory with fire exits, and this other one was made in one without, some fraction of consumers would pay more for the safer one. But the platform doesn't surface that information because surfacing it would make the cheaper option look worse, and the cheaper option is what drives volume.
Volume is everything. AliExpress isn't a retailer, it's a marketplace. It doesn't own factories, it doesn't employ factory workers, it doesn't ship products. It provides the storefront, the payment processing, and the logistics coordination. That structure gives it plausible deniability on everything else. When a supplier uses forced labor, AliExpress can say, that's the supplier, not us. When a factory dumps waste into a river, AliExpress can say, we don't own that factory. The platform model is a deniability machine.
Which is why Daniel's question about whether the platform can mature is really a question about whether that deniability can be pierced. Can external pressure, regulation, consumer organizing, reputation risk, force a marketplace to take responsibility for what happens in its supply chain, even when it doesn't legally own the supply chain?
There's actually a live experiment running on this right now. The European Union's Digital Services Act has applied to AliExpress since August 2024. It requires trader traceability, meaning European users can see supplier registration details, file complaints about non-compliant products, and access transparency reports. But Israeli users can't access any of those features. Same platform, same suppliers, different rules depending on where you're logging in from.
A consumer in Berlin can see whether a supplier is verified, and a consumer in Tel Aviv sees the same product listing with none of that information.
That's not a technical limitation. It's a political choice. The platform has already built the traceability infrastructure for the European market. It could flip a switch and make it available globally. It chooses not to because no regulation requires it to.
That's the part that makes Daniel's cautious optimism hard to sustain. The platform has demonstrated it can be more transparent. It's doing it right now for 200 million European users. But transparency costs something, whether it's reduced sales or increased liability or just the administrative overhead. And without a regulatory stick, there's no incentive to expand it.
Although, and I want to be fair here, Daniel's observation that the platform has matured over 10 years is real. The AliExpress of 2016 was a Wild West. Counterfeit goods everywhere, scams were common, customer service was non-existent. Today, the logistics are reliable, the payment protection is stronger, the seller rating systems are more robust. It has matured as a commercial platform. The question is whether commercial maturity and ethical maturity are the same thing, or whether they're entirely separate tracks.
They're separate tracks that sometimes run in opposite directions. Better logistics means faster delivery, which means more air freight, which means higher carbon emissions per order. Commercial optimization can actively worsen the ethical picture.
That's the sustainability paradox in a nutshell. The more efficient AliExpress becomes at its core function, getting cheap goods to your door as fast as possible, the harder it becomes to make the case that it should slow down, add friction, raise prices, and disclose uncomfortable facts. Efficiency is the enemy of reflection.
Let's ground this in the four things that actually make AliExpress the default for Israelis. Because Daniel's experience isn't idiosyncratic, it's structural. First, Amazon simply never built fulfillment infrastructure here. No Israeli warehouse. No Prime same-day delivery. Amazon ships to Israel, but it's third-party couriers and international post. Slow, expensive, unpredictable.
Second, and this is the one that hits everyone's wallet, Israel's cost of living runs about 30% above the OECD average. So when a platform offers the same goods at a fraction of the local price, that's not a luxury discount, it's a lifeline. For a lot of households, AliExpress isn't where you buy luxuries, it's where you buy basics without getting gouged.
Third, the local middleman problem. Daniel was blunt. Local shops buy from the same Chinese suppliers, mark it up, and put it on a shelf. The markup isn't paying for expertise or service, it's paying for the shelf. I've seen products in local stores identical to AliExpress listings at 3 times the price, with no warranty, no installation, no advice. Consumers have figured this out.
The fourth reason is the one Daniel emphasized most, the catalog. If you need a specific GPU riser or a replacement hinge for a cabinet manufactured in Shenzhen 8 years ago, the local market simply does not stock it. Not, it's expensive. It doesn't exist here. AliExpress is the only store that carries it.
That's where the frictionlessness argument really lands. Daniel described the local alternative, figure out the Hebrew terminology, check supplier websites with inaccurate inventory, make phone calls, drive somewhere, discover they're out of stock. Versus typing a part number into AliExpress and having it at your door in 10 days. That's not a preference. It's a rational choice by any measure. So those four forces, no Amazon, high cost of living, middleman markups, infinite catalog, make AliExpress structurally embedded. It's not going anywhere, which means the question of whether it can become sustainable isn't academic. Millions of Israelis are locked into this platform.
So the real question underneath is whether the platform can be reformed from within that structural dependency. Daniel's watched it mature. Fewer scams, better logistics, the Kainyal hub making delivery predictable. That's real progress. But it's progress on the commercial axis. The ethical axis is a different story. The platform got better at being a platform. It didn't get better at being a responsible participant in global supply chains. And those two things may actually be in tension. The Liege consolidation hub that makes delivery so reliable, that's air freight infrastructure. The more efficient it gets, the more packages flow through it, the higher the aggregate carbon output. Commercial maturation and environmental impact are moving in opposite directions.
When Daniel says he's cautiously optimistic because the platform feels less like the Wild West, I get that. The user experience has improved. But the things that improved are the things that drive sales volume. The things that haven't improved are the things that would constrain sales volume. That's not a coincidence.
It's the same pattern across platform economies. Maturation means better algorithms, better logistics, better fraud detection, all the things that make the flywheel spin faster. It doesn't mean better labor standards or lower emissions, because those don't make the flywheel spin faster. They add friction. And the entire architecture is optimized to remove friction.
The episode's central question crystallizes into something pretty sharp. Can a platform whose entire value proposition is cheap, fast, and frictionless retrofit itself for sustainability without losing the cheap, fast, and frictionless part? Or are those goals fundamentally opposed?
Let's pull on the platform model itself. AliExpress doesn't own factories, doesn't employ factory workers. It provides the digital storefront, the payment rails, and through Kanyao, the logistics. Everything else, manufacturing, labor practices, material sourcing, waste disposal, happens inside independent supplier businesses that AliExpress has no legal ownership of and therefore no legal responsibility for. The platform model is a deniability architecture. When a supplier uses forced labor, AliExpress can say, "That's the supplier, not us." Legally, they're correct. But the platform designed the incentive system that selected that supplier, cheapest plus fastest shipping, wins the algorithm. So the deniability is legal, but the responsibility is moral, and the two don't map onto each other.
The platform creates the conditions that reward bad behavior, then claims innocence when bad behavior happens.
That's the externality machine in its purest form. The costs of labor exploitation and environmental damage are borne by workers and communities in China. The benefits, low prices, fast delivery, are captured by consumers in Tel Aviv and shareholders in Hangzhou. The platform sits in the middle, taking a cut, while the actual costs of production are off its books entirely.
Daniel's hope is that the platform could let conscientious consumers filter for suppliers who don't do those things. But if the platform acknowledged the difference, it would be admitting those things happen on its marketplace.
Which brings us to the VAT threshold, and this is where Israeli politics enters. Right now, personal imports under about $75 are exempt from the 17% VAT. So a $40 item from AliExpress arrives tax-free, while the same item bought locally carries an extra $6 or $7 in tax. That's a structural subsidy for importing over buying domestic. It's become a political football. Free market advocates say it saves households money. Retailers say it's destroying domestic commerce. Neither side is entirely wrong, so the exemption just sits there, unresolved.
The perverse incentive is real. If you're a retailer importing goods from China to sell in your Israeli shop, you pay VAT on the import and charge VAT on the sale. If a consumer buys directly from AliExpress under the threshold, no VAT at all. The policy is effectively telling consumers, don't buy from your neighbors, buy from a warehouse in Shenzhen. That's not a market outcome, that's a policy choice.
It connects directly to the environmental paradox. That $75 threshold encourages exactly the behavior that's worst for the planet. Lots of small individual orders, each flown from China to Liege to Tel Aviv on dedicated cargo flights. If that were applied uniformly, consumers would have an incentive to consolidate. Fewer larger orders, fewer flights per item. The tax code is accidentally an environmental policy, and a bad one.
Now, let's talk about those flights. Kanyao's hub in Liege is the linchpin. Packages from dozens of Chinese suppliers are consolidated there, sorted, and loaded onto dedicated cargo planes bound for Tel Aviv. That consolidation is efficient. Per package, far better than individual courier shipping. But it's still air freight, generating 50 to 100 times more CO2 per ton kilometer than sea freight. So the consolidation improves the efficiency of a fundamentally high emission mode. It's making the worst option less bad, not making it good.
The comparison to local shopping isn't straightforward. If you drive to three stores looking for a specific standoff, find none of them have it, and then order from AliExpress anyway, you've burned fuel for nothing plus the air freight. But if the item is available locally and you walk or take transit to buy it, the local purchase is almost certainly lower carbon. The platform gives you no way to make that calculation because it shows you neither the carbon cost of the flight nor the availability of the local alternative.
Which is the frictionlessness trade-off in its purest form. Daniel described the local experience, finding Hebrew terminology, checking websites with inaccurate inventory, making phone calls, driving somewhere, discovering they're out of stock. All of that friction is information. It's telling you something about the local market. AliExpress removes all of it. You type a part number, see a price and delivery date, click buy. The frictionlessness is the user experience triumph. And it's also the ethical blindfold.
The UX is designed to hide complexity. You don't see a factory audit, a carbon footprint, labor conditions. You don't even see which factory made the thing, just a seller name that might be a trading company with no relationship to the actual manufacturer. The platform's interface is a series of decisions about what not to show you. And every piece of information not shown is a cost not internalized. The entire design philosophy abstracts away everything except price and delivery time. Everything else, ethics, sustainability, labor, materials, waste, carbon, is stripped out before it reaches your screen. Not because engineers couldn't display it, but because displaying it would complicate the purchase decision, and complicated purchase decisions mean fewer purchases.
That's where the knock-on effect gets unsettling. If the algorithm favors cheapest plus fastest, and ethical suppliers have higher costs, then the algorithm isn't neutral. It's a filter that selects for worse labor practices and worse environmental outcomes. The suppliers who invest in fire safety and fair wages are structurally disadvantaged in search rankings.
It's a race to the bottom with the platform's own code acting as the referee who only counts price and speed. If you're a factory owner in Shenzhen deciding whether to install proper ventilation or pay overtime wages, you're making that decision in the shadow of an algorithm that will punish you for every cent you add to the unit cost. The platform doesn't tell you to cut corners. It just makes cutting corners the only way to survive. The architecture is the policy.
Here's where the regulatory asymmetry becomes impossible to ignore. Since August 2024, the EU's Digital Services Act has required AliExpress to provide trader traceability. European users can see supplier registration details, verify business identities, and file complaints. Israeli users logging into the exact same platform see none of that. Same supplier, same product, same listing. Different information depending on which side of a regulatory border you're standing on.
That's not because the infrastructure doesn't exist. AliExpress already built it. The supplier verification database, the complaint mechanisms, the transparency reports, all live and operational for the European market. The platform could extend it to Israel tomorrow. It chooses not to because no Israeli law requires it.
Which means the opacity Daniel's experiencing isn't a technical limitation. It's a political choice made possible by a regulatory vacuum. Israel's consumer protection laws were written for a world of physical storefronts. They haven't been updated for platform economies where the seller is in Guangdong, the payment processor is in Singapore, and the logistics hub is in Belgium. The Knesset could mandate supply chain disclosure. The DSA proves it's technically feasible, but there's been no serious legislative push, probably because the platform is too popular to regulate without political cost. Nobody wants to be the politician who made AliExpress more expensive.
Which brings us to the sustainability paradox. If AliExpress became fully transparent about its supply chain, if every listing showed labor conditions, environmental impact, factory audit results, would consumers actually want that? Some fraction of conscientious buyers would. But the platform's entire growth has been built on consumers choosing cheap over known. Transparency might reduce sales, which reduces the platform's incentive to implement it, which means the transparency never arrives unless it's forced.
It's the loop Daniel identified without quite naming it. The platform can't become transparent because transparency would hurt the platform, and the platform won't voluntarily hurt itself.
Alibaba's Green Channel program is the case study that proves this. Voluntary sustainability certification, launched in 2023. Adoption has been abysmal. Certified suppliers pay time and money for certification, their products cost more, and the search algorithm doesn't give them any boost. So certified suppliers see no sales benefit, and suppliers who don't certify see no penalty. The program exists on paper and goes nowhere in practice. The certification is a signal nobody's listening for. Worse, it's a signal the platform's own architecture ignores.
Compare this to Amazon, which at least has climate pledge-friendly badges and some supply chain transparency tools. But those are largely performative. They cover Amazon's own brands, not the third-party marketplace where most of the volume lives. And AliExpress is even further behind because it's a true marketplace. It doesn't own any inventory, doesn't control any factories, has even less leverage over suppliers than Amazon does.
The marketplace model is a responsibility shield, and that shield is the reason Daniel's decade of watching the platform mature hasn't produced the ethical maturation he's hoping for. Commercial maturation, better logistics, fewer scams, faster delivery, happened because those things increase sales, ethical maturation hasn't happened because it wouldn't. The platform's incentives and the consumer's ethics are pointed in different directions, and right now, the incentives are winning.
Given all those structural barriers, the algorithm, the deniability architecture, the regulatory vacuum, what can someone like Daniel actually do? Because just stop buying from AliExpress isn't realistic for most Israelis, and it's not even necessarily the right answer.
The single most effective lever is order consolidation. Fewer, larger orders instead of many small ones. Every time a package flies from Liege to Tel Aviv, there's a fixed carbon cost per flight. Consolidating 5 small orders into one larger shipment means one flight leg instead of 5. It's not perfect, but it directly reduces the per-item footprint.
It's one of those rare cases where the environmentally better option is also the economically better one. Larger orders are more likely to hit the VAT threshold, which means you pay the tax, but you're also getting more efficient shipping per item. Some Israelis are already organizing group buys specifically to thread this needle, combine orders to hit the threshold efficiently, minimize flights, and split the VAT across multiple households.
It's a workaround, not a fix, but it's a real one. The second thing that actually exists right now is that AliExpress does have filtering tools buried in advanced search. There's a verified supplier badge, and in some categories, a green filter. But they're hidden. You have to know to look for them, and even then, you need to understand what they actually mean. The green badge means the supplier self-certified. It's not a third-party audit. There's no independent verification, no inspection, no enforcement. So it's better than nothing. It at least signals the supplier knows sustainability matters to some buyers, but it's not the kind of certification that would satisfy a conscientious consumer who wants verified ethical sourcing. The verified supplier badge is slightly stronger. It confirms the business is legally registered, but says nothing about labor practices or environmental standards. So these tools exist, and Daniel should use them, but with clear eyes about what they certify and what they don't.
Which brings us to the uncomfortable part. Individual consumer choices, consolidating orders, using filters, researching suppliers, they matter at the margins, but they won't fix systemic opacity. The platform's incentive structure doesn't change because a few thousand conscientious Israelis change their buying habits.
That's where the third lever comes in, and it's the one that actually has teeth, regulatory transparency. The EU's Digital Services Act proves that regulation can force platforms to disclose supplier information. Israel's Knesset could pass equivalent legislation, mandate supply chain disclosure for any platform above a certain market share threshold. The technical infrastructure already exists. AliExpress built it for Europe. It's a political question now, not a technical one.
That requires organized political pressure, not just consumer preference. And in Israel, AliExpress is so popular that no politician wants to be the one who made it more expensive or slower.
Which is why the framing matters. This shouldn't be sold as, make AliExpress worse. It should be sold as, give Israeli consumers the same transparency European consumers already have. The information exists. The platform has it. The question is whether Israeli citizens get access to it or not. That's a much easier political argument than regulate the platform.
Framing it as a consumer right rather than a restriction, Israelis deserve to know what Europeans already know about the same products from the same suppliers.
And the honest answer to Daniel's question, can AliExpress become sustainable, is that it has a path, but that path runs through external pressure, not internal evolution. The platform will not voluntarily become transparent because transparency would complicate the purchase decision and potentially reduce sales, but it can be made transparent. The DSA proved that. The question is whether Israeli consumers and lawmakers will demand it.
The answer is a qualified yes. Reform is possible. The tools exist. The infrastructure exists. The precedent exists. But it won't happen because the platform decides to do the right thing. It'll happen only if regulation or organized consumer pressure changes the incentive calculus.
That's the part where Daniel's cautious optimism meets reality. He's right that the platform has matured commercially. But commercial maturity and ethical maturity are separate tracks, and the second one doesn't follow automatically from the first. It has to be demanded.
There's a question underneath all of this that I keep coming back to. If AliExpress actually became fully transparent and sustainable, If every listing showed you the factory audit, the carbon footprint, the labor conditions, would it still be AliExpress? Or would it have lost the very thing that made it indispensable in the first place?
That's the knife edge. The platform's entire value proposition is built on not asking hard questions. Cheap, fast, frictionless. Those three words only work together because the fourth word, transparent, is absent. Add transparency and you add friction. You add the moment where the consumer pauses and thinks, should I really buy this? And that pause is exactly what the platform is engineered to eliminate.
The ethical version of AliExpress might be a slower, more expensive, less appealing platform. Which means the version Daniel wants might be a contradiction in terms.
I don't think it's a full contradiction, but it's a tension that can't be resolved by the platform alone. The European experiment shows you can add transparency without destroying the utility. European users still buy from AliExpress. They just have more information when they do. The platform didn't collapse under the DSA, which suggests the fear that transparency would kill the platform is overstated, or at least self-serving. Platforms always warn that regulation will break them. They almost never do. What regulation breaks is the ability to profit from hiding things. That's different from breaking the business.
The bigger picture here, the thing that'll outlast this specific platform and this specific market, is that the tension between global platform efficiency and local market sustainability isn't going anywhere. Israel is an early case study, not an outlier. High cost of living, weak local e-commerce infrastructure, no Amazon fulfillment. That describes a lot of markets, and the list is growing. The AliExpress model will only expand.
Which makes the regulatory question urgent beyond Israel. Every market that looks like Israel faces the same choice. Let the platform operate in the dark, or demand the transparency infrastructure that already exists for European users. The technical part is solved. The political part is the bottleneck.
Daniel's decade of watching the platform mature. He's not wrong. It has matured. Fewer scams, better logistics, more reliable delivery. But maturity isn't the same as responsibility. A teenager who stops breaking things isn't automatically a good citizen. The platform grew up commercially. It hasn't grown up ethically. And without regulation, it may never have to.
That's the uncomfortable landing. The platform will take responsibility when it's forced to, and not a moment before. The good news, and I think this is the thread Daniel's optimism is tugging at, is that it can be forced. The DSA proved it. The infrastructure exists. The question is whether the political will exists to demand it.
Until that political will materializes, conscientious consumers are stuck in the loop Daniel described. Using the platform because they have to, hoping it gets better, taking what small steps they can, consolidating orders, using the hidden filters, advocating for regulation. It's not satisfying, but it's honest.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1720s, French naturalist Jean-Baptiste Duterte documented that Comorian artisans produced a vivid crimson dye from the crushed shells of a local sea snail, a pigment so lightfast it was used to mark the boundaries of kabaddi courts in the island's informal tournaments. Making the Comoros possibly the only place where marine gastropod chemistry and South Asian contact sports overlapped.
I have several questions, none of which I want answered.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for that contribution. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own questions, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We're back next week.
Try not to think about the snail.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro. With text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.